Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the New Mainstream Podcast, where we explore the impact of multicultural consumers on marketing and media. I'm your host, Mario Carrasco, and co-founder of Think Now. Excited for our guest today, Jason Tremieux, Director of Global Supplier Diversity at Facebook. Welcome, Jason.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
Yeah. Glad to have you on. So before we dive in, I feel like I actually met you through a great supplier diversity day that you had for Latinx businesses for Hispanic Heritage Month. We had a couple of conversations, but we didn't get to dig in like how you became the director of global supplier diversity at Facebook. So we'd love to hear a little bit about your journey there.
Yeah. So, I began my career really excited about helping entrepreneurs connect to economic opportunity. This is now over two decades ago as a student reading about the Grameen Bank and a book, a famous book by David Bornstein, The Price of a Dream. And it just clicked for me that the conventional wisdom about the world, specifically about those living in economically marginalized communities, that they're too poor to take loans and that they'll squander the money. All these tropes and, biases that persisted and have persisted and sadly still persist were out there. And yet here was this, here were these women. I'll put them at the center of the story because that's really what the story is about the entrepreneur. These women who were getting access to capital and doing these tremendous things for their businesses and their communities. And ultimately, would go on over many years later to show that they had actually moved the needle of gross domestic product in Bangladesh. This I'm talking about microfinance, this idea that you could lend and should explicitly lend to women in particular, but entrepreneurs, that they can access this capital to grow their companies. And ultimately, we saw this transformation in this country. And I was a student at the time reading about this, and I said, this is what I want to work on. And so I've been fortunate for the past 20 plus years to operate at what I call the intersection of mission and the marketplace. How do you harness the power of the marketplace to have social impact? And I won't give you the long version, but in summary, right before I joined Facebook, I was running the supplier diversity and community impact programs for Super Bowl 50. This was the Super Bowl that was played here in the San Francisco Bay Area, which is where I'm based, in 2016. But in the months leading up to the Super Bowl, we had determined that this was going to be the most giving Super Bowl in history and that it would have the most community impact. And I was fortunate to be in a position to kind of drive two of those work streams, the supplier diversity work specifically and the community impact work, which was organized around something called the 50 Fund, which we gave grants to local nonprofits. But it was the supplier diversity work that led me to the opportunity at Facebook. I was wrapping up that Super Bowl. We were in the fall preceding the game itself, and I actually was invited to speak at an event hosted, ironically, by Google. And they were talking about, they were pulling together a bunch of tech companies to talk about supplier diversity. Their efforts had launched the prior year in 2014, and they invited me to talk a little bit about the experience at the Super Bowl. And so I came and I shared about how we stood up this program to ensure that local diverse businesses got access to the tremendous amount of contracting opportunities that are surround not just the game itself, but the week and the months leading up to it. And I shared and I shared, and there were a number of people in the room, including a team at Facebook. And the team at Facebook, which I did not know at the time, were looking for someone to come and stand up the work at Facebook. And I was very fortunate to be able to interview for that and get that role alongside a colleague the two of us to stand that work up in 2016. So that was my story of how I got to Facebook. And it's been a tremendous journey over the last 5 years now, over 5.5 years that I've been at the company.
That's incredible. And thanks for sharing. And I love your perspective from really born out of this research. I'm familiar with that research. I'm also familiar, I think, with other kind of micro finance case studies out of West Africa as well for entrepreneurs. You mentioned something that I wanted to dig into a little bit. Like, there's still this perception that, you know, funds will be squandered. And I guess from the perspective of supplier diversity and, you know, flash forward now where we're at, we're not necessarily talking about microfinance in this context, but more diversity, supplier diversity. Is there any recent data that you can point to? Like, it doesn't have to be Facebook, just how supplier diversity initiatives impact entrepreneurs and GDP. And I don't know, I also think about equity, right, from a gender racial perspective as well.
Yeah, I wish I had at the ready a set of studies I could quote. And this, I think, is a major failure of our industry. And I say our industry, meaning the industry of supplier diversity, that we have not done, I think, the level of rigorous analysis on the impacts of these programs. I think when you look at, in particular, the history of supplier diversity as it relates to, let's say, public sector contracting. So these are your, you know, local or city or state or government programs to encourage participation, for example, by minority-owned or women-owned businesses, and they set targets and goals. Well, through a process, they actually, to set those targets and goals, they usually do something called a disparity study. And these disparity studies, of which here in the San Francisco Bay Area, we have them, cities like Chicago and Tulsa and you name it, have done these studies. And the sad irony is, you know, they all kind of show the same thing, that diverse suppliers in particular are not given the opportunities to contract for public sector programs, public sector projects at the same rate as others. And yet, of course, we know from the census data that entrepreneurship is growing fastest, net starts and growth of existing businesses within, in particular, Black, Latinx, Hispanic, and Asian American communities. We know women-owned businesses through a great study that does come out every year through American Express, that women-owned businesses are starting and growing businesses kind of fastest within those racial and ethnic demographic groups. But these studies that would come out, these disparity studies, would show that we're still missing the connection, right? These businesses are there, but the opportunities for contracting are not presenting themselves in kind of the same commensurate way. And so I think this is a gap for supplier diversity in terms of research and data that can show that when we give diverse suppliers the chance to compete. I mean, I think when we look at, you know, let's suspend what we know to be, of course, the systemic biases and discrimination that still happens. But even if we suspend that, I think in general, and I won't say this is certainly the main, you know, completely the mainstream view, but in general, when you give more chances for firms to compete for your business, you're going to get better results. I mean, that's the benefit of competition, equitable competition, fair competition. We're going to assume those things. Of course, we know that doesn't happen all the time. But so it kind of is lost on me why we don't talk more about what's happening in the macroeconomic context. These businesses are growing. They're growing the fastest. They're growing in diverse industries. And yet we still struggle to connect them to the contracting opportunities that we know yield the types of revenues, the types of opportunities that then allow those businesses to grow, allow those businesses, of course, to hire more, allow those businesses to thrive. So, I, you know, unfortunately, I don't have a great body of work that can point to this.
No, that was super insightful. And two stories come to mind I want to share with you. And it's not a question. It's just more of like what you think about this. I mean, so Think Now, you know, we've been around for 10 years. We're getting into our 10th year. And we haven't seen the type of inbound interest in our company like at this scale before, right? We've grown. We've been able to grow and be profitable without any venture capital, just out there grinding. And it's great. It's great to be, you know, reached out to and to win this business. But it's a little bit bittersweet because I realize, wow, what happened the other 9 years, know, that I've had to knock on doors and tell people, hey, you should really be looking at multicultural consumers. You really should be doing research, you know, constantly. So it's great to be courted by these, you know, just flagship amazing companies. And then on the other hand, it kind of makes you think, like, to your point, right, about equitable, like, you know, how many opportunities did I miss just because I wasn't in the right rooms, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, you know, I just pick up on that to say, you know, I heard it said once, you know, obviously you're in a B2B marketplace. A lot of supplier diversity is focused on the B2B marketplace, but business to business is not really a great descriptor, right? It's always business to a person.
Yeah.
And when we talk about the way that business happens, we have to kind of break it down to that fundamental element of a relationship. And if companies are made up of people who, I'll just use a, you know, broad generalization here, have a kind of homogenous set of relationships or a lot of overlapping circles, you can expect that that will be where those business relationships come from. If you are able to expand that set of that circle, by having a diverse workforce that brings in a whole new set of the social graph, then it's conceivable that you will have exposure to talent and businesses that you didn't before. And I think that's when supplier diversity is at its best, is when we recognize that what we're really doing is we're broadening the aperture of talent that our company needs to run, to operate successfully and to achieve our mission. And your business, which has been operating, as you said, for all these years, you know, without the investment, you've been able to make it a profitable company. That creating connections and bridges to companies like yours is what supplier diversity is intending to do. But it's what you do and how you deliver the services that is really why you're here. Supplier diversity is just that initial connection point to get that door opened. And I'm really excited to hear, and congratulations on, you know, both all the success you've already had. And yes, this moment that we're in where this is not the first time I've heard a diverse supplier share this kind of story about what the last 18 months has been for their company.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And I appreciate you bringing it back to business objectives, because, you know, at times there's the narrative out there that it's a handout. When the reality is, and bringing it back to what we do specifically, there's not too many companies. I mean, we're focused on researching multicultural consumers founded by multicultural founders with a multicultural staff. And to your point about having that diverse workforce, to me, it's kind of a no-brainer. Like, if you want to research these communities, you have to have at least some people from that community to not introduce bias into your questionnaires, into the analysis. So much goes into putting together a market research project. So we pride ourselves in delivering a better product and service for companies like Facebook, Honda, to actually get out what multicultural consumers are thinking about their brand, right? It's about meeting business objectives and helping the companies grow. And I did want to mention, I really do appreciate the Supplier Diversity Day. And it was specifically Latinx that Facebook put on, because it's the first time I've ever been part of a supplier diversity program focused on marketing, market research, and just more broadly, professional services. I just realized that right now while talking to you, because when you were talking about working with local governments early on, right, we have all the minority supplier here in Los Angeles, California. We actually have the SBA 8A designation as well to work with the federal government. And I would attend these supplier diversity, summits, whatever, for the city of Los Angeles, for California. And there was bias, it kind of embedded in these programs, right? Like they didn't know what to do with a market research company. All of the projects, and this is, I haven't been in a while, so caveat for those listening, but they were all related to construction, cleaning, et cetera. And I have mad respect for those businesses. I mean, I know people in those industries and they're great industries. But to assume that that's all we do, that was an issue. So I really appreciate Facebook setting aside a day for professional services, marketing, and research.
Well, you know, I appreciate that, but I'm fortunate. We are at a company that buys a lot of goods and services of every different stripe. And one of the things that we have been committed to is, as a supplier diversity team, has been to really try to shorten the line between the diverse supplier, the goods and services that they provide, and the buyer on the Facebook side who actually is going to engage that type of supplier. We've tried to create spaces where you're talking directly to those buyers. You're not talking to supplier diversity professionals, although, you know, we love to engage, and some of us have different backgrounds. I'm fortunate to have a team with marketing sourcers, so sourcing professionals who cover the marketing space, including market research. We wanted to make sure we get businesses as quickly to a yes or no. We've always talked about that from the time we launched this, that we're going to wrestle opportunities to the ground quickly. And sometimes that ends in a no. And it may be a no, not now, not a no, never. But we wanted to not waste people's time. We understand that the entrepreneur's time is incredibly valuable, and they're running their companies. And if we can quickly suss out, is there an opportunity here? Is there not? And we won't do that unless we really try to put, like I said, the right buyer in the room with the right seller. And I'm grateful that we were able to do that through that event and others we've had like that.
Yeah, definitely. And I think this is a good segue. Like, what, you know, broadly, what is kind of the driving mission of the Global Supplier Diversity Initiative at Facebook?
Yeah, the driving mission, we say our mission is to help diverse suppliers do business with Facebook and with the people and communities that Facebook connects. And I think that's important for us to say it that way. It's something we've maintained since we started. Doing business with Facebook is traditional supplier diversity. We're here to help diverse suppliers compete for and win business, win contracts with Facebook, because we buy lots of goods and services to run our company, to achieve our mission as a company of bringing the world closer together. But we also operate a platform. We operate products and services that hundreds of millions of small and medium businesses, many of them diverse owned, use every day to connect to their customers. And we want to bring the full kind of power and scale of our company and our platforms and services to bear on this work, because we believe fundamentally that when we help diverse suppliers connect to economic opportunity, it achieves so much more than just that contract or using that product to reach their customer. We're really talking about building wealth, building transgenerational wealth, because we're building assets and creating jobs. And so that economic impact that we're able to have really is very powerful and something we take very seriously. So it's been our mission since I started at the company and we launched this work, to really not just think exclusively about how to help more businesses, you know, contract with Facebook, but really how can we use this whole array of tools at our disposal and the type of company that we are to elevate these entrepreneurs, elevate their companies, and demonstrate in very practical ways that these communities are really who we're building this product for, this services for. That's a tall order. It's not something we've certainly achieved yet, but it's certainly very much our motivation as a team, a global team. And it's important to note that even though supplier diversity kind of as a concept and at least as a construct and industry kind of came out of the US, we're really talking about the same thing everywhere in the world, which is if you look at the, what I sometimes call the economic margins, it's always hard to frame a community in a negative sense. I do not like to do it. But I think it's helpful when we think about almost to a country, when you look at where entrepreneurship is growing, it's where it has to grow because the people in the people in those communities are underserved. They don't, there's so much that they face and challenges, but they still have to live. They still have to provide for their families. They still have ideas and dreams and talents that they want to see realized. And so they're starting these businesses. That's where we should be looking for our talent that's going to help us run our company. And so I think that global kind of viewpoint is something that we've also really wanted to embrace, which is that supplier diversity is a helpful kind of name and structure for the US, but really what we're talking about is the talent in these communities that's untapped and an opportunity for us to be a part of the flourishing and thriving of these communities.
Yeah. And I think you make a great point in that it's not just about the suppliers who help Facebook, you know, run as a company, but it's also you're providing a platform for so many people, solo entrepreneurs, to stand up businesses, you know, quickly off of Facebook. And so it's kind of in both ends, right? I mean, you have diverse suppliers helping diverse founders and vice versa.
Yeah. And I want to just, if I may, on that point, I mean, that was a big and is a big focus for our team, which is, you know, we can tend to look at the companies doing business with us and, you know, kind of as Facebook, the big customer. But what we've tried to really do is build a community of entrepreneurs, of diverse suppliers, diverse entrepreneurs that also are looking at each other. We launched, for example, last year, a diverse supplier community group on Facebook. Now, this is exclusive to our diverse suppliers, so diverse owned companies providing goods and services to Facebook. But we invite them to join a community group on Facebook where one of the goals of that group is to make sure that they are also able to network with each other. We've seen already just the first year, so many times when a diverse supplier is looking for a good or service themselves or a vendor themselves or supplier themselves, and they've been able to look within the community. And I feel that that is the virtuous cycle that we're trying to, you know, really push along because yes, it's great that you can do business with Facebook or with Honda or some of these larger companies, but we know that the majority of business is happening between small and medium businesses themselves. And so yeah. If we can help strengthen that diverse supplier, quote unquote, ecosystem, then I think that's something else that Facebook is uniquely positioned to do because we have the products and services that allow for that type of community building to happen on our platforms.
So I have a question. This is just something I'm thinking about. You know, I think it's just the nature of being an entrepreneur or a business owner. You know, I have this nagging fear that this momentum from 2020, is going to die down, that the conversation is going to start to slow down and we'll kind of get back, maybe not to normal, maybe not pre-2020, but it's going to die down a bit. So I'm curious, what's your opinion? You know, where you sit in your purview, is that, do you think that's the case, or do you see momentum? Do you see other companies jumping into the fold and realizing the importance of supplier diversity as it pertains to their businesses?
Yeah, I share that concern. I'll just be honest. And I don't think it is unfounded. What I would say is this, at least at Facebook, we have tried and we've been very explicit in our language. We don't call ourselves a program. We've tried always to steer clear of that. Sometimes it pops into things we write or things we say. But the reason is because programs come and go. They have budgets, they have headcount, and they're easy to kind of stand up, but they're also easy to put aside. We've always said our goal has been to create a muscle. Our goal has been to create in the DNA of the company, in the way we buy goods and services, a preference for diverse suppliers. And what I mean by that is that we, in our systems, in our tools, in our processes, somewhat in our policies, although I will say Facebook's not a incredibly kind of policy heavy driven culture, when it comes to procurement, we've tried to really not care whether or not you want to buy from a diverse supplier or care anything about diverse suppliers. We're going to make it so that diverse suppliers, qualified suppliers, are in front of you when you need that good or service, and that you have every incentive to engage them, whether or not you know that they're diverse or not. And that may be controversial. That may sound like, oh, we're taking away this element of, you know, kind of identity and who these businesses are. And we don't think about it that way at all. What we think about is, in order for this to sustain, Facebook has been in a position where we've grown substantially since I started at the company. I don't know the official stats that are out there, but I'll round them off to say, I think when I started 5.5 years ago, we were about 17,000 people. I think we're closing in on 70,000 5 years later. And because Facebook is decentralized in the way that we buy goods and services, meaning that anyone can kind of engage the suppliers they need to get their jobs done, we always knew we would never, no matter how charismatic we were and effective in our communications, we'd never be able to, quote unquote, convince enough people to that supplier diversity was kind of the right thing to do. Of course, it's the right thing to do, but we set out explicitly trying, we said, we're not here to change hearts and minds. What we are here to do is embed this so ingrained in the way we do this work, in the way that we buy goods and services, in the way that we consider new suppliers, that whether or not, again, you cared about this issue, you were going to kind of live out the values of supplier diversity because we'd so embedded it in our systems. Now, I want to be clear, we're not there yet, but I'm very proud that, and to address your question, companies that are taking this approach, I think we'll see that regardless of kind of how the wind blows over the coming years with respect to this window of time right now that we have, whether or not the kind of fire stays hot or it peters out, I think companies that have taken this approach of embedding it into their DNA are going to see that those efforts are going to be able to be sustained over time. Now, obviously, the proof will be in the pudding. I mean, you have to come back and ask me this question in 3 or 4 years and see. But I'm very confident. I mean, just as one practical example, we committed publicly last year in 2020, alongside many other companies, making public commitments around many things related to address racial discrimination, racial injustice. We committed to spending $1 billion annually with diverse suppliers starting this year in 2021. So our goal this year is to spend at least $1 billion with diverse suppliers, and of that billion, at least $100 million of it with Black-owned businesses. And that is a commitment we've now made in perpetuity. So when you think about a supplier diversity program's kind of growth trajectory, look, $1 billion is wonderful for all the diverse suppliers that are getting those dollars and able to invest those dollars in their business. But $1 billion in Facebook is not enough. We need to be spending a lot more than that. But that commitment, that threshold, establishing that as a threshold now puts our company and allows me and our team internally to set priorities with our leaders that now hold them accountable to achieving at least that as a threshold every year now. So when we've made these commitments, I think what I'm encouraged by is that some of these commitments are in perpetuity. They're not, we're trying to achieve some goal by this point in time, and then who knows what after that. This is like, all right, we've established a new threshold. And you can judge that threshold, and you should judge that threshold as to whether or not we can do more, we should do more. And I will tell you, be the first one to tell you we can and should do more. But that threshold is helpful because it then allows us internally to set new, kind of set the bar higher and realize that's now the floor. We can't go below that floor. So how can we now use that threshold to set the next threshold that we'll set at some point in the future?
I love that. And for those listening, and I mean, you know, I think to me, the part that resonated most about what you said is that it's not a program. If you have a supplier diversity program, okay, that's a good first step, but it's got to be embedded into the DNA of the company. And it goes back to an earlier point. I feel like in order for this to be sustaining, we have to put some metrics in how diverse vendors are helping the growth of the company. Because I feel like if we don't make that connection, if you can't see how we are helping the bottom line, it's hard to be sustainable. And I know for a fact that, I mean, well, there's studies out there, right? I mean, when you look at diverse teams, for example, that lead to better business objectives, I think, right. I think those same principles apply to diverse companies helping businesses. So I feel like we need to get those metrics in place to kind of measure the impact that diverse suppliers are having on companies.
And I think you mentioned it, you know, many companies know that if they're consumer facing, they know that the consumer of their now and of their future is a multicultural consumer. I'm going to use that term, probably assuming some things about how you use that term, and would welcome being pushed back on there if that's not the correct kind of use. But I think that the business case is, frankly, and I again, maybe a controversial opinion on this, but I'm almost tired of seeing us have to make that type of case, because what it shows to me is that these companies don't know where their growth is going to come from. And I don't know how you can read a paper and a census, the latest census numbers, and you look at your schools and you look at the fact that now in many states and soon to be, you know, obviously across, just in the U.S., you know, we will have racial and ethnic minorities be the majority of schools. Well, I have a 7-year-old daughter, those 7-year-olds and 10-year-olds and 12-year-olds are going to be buying your products and services in some few number of years. So how do we, that case to me has been made. I think people kind of acknowledging that case is still there only shows that maybe they're not really understanding kind of their own products and connection to the consumer market. Now, you know, if that's a market that you're not serving or what have you, again, a lot of the work we do in the supplier diversity space is in the B2B space. But then I get back to just, well, what are these workforces? Who are these workforces? Who do they look like? Well, increasingly, they are going to be even more diverse, obviously, as those same 7 and 10 and 12-year-olds grow up and either start their own companies or they work for employers. So I just feel like there's a different, and I'm not sure I know the answer, Mario, but I think that there's a different case that we need to be thinking about here with respect to the value of supplier diversity, which is a little bit of us needing to call our own kind of bluff, that the way we do business is not this, you know, kind of equitable process, that the way we do business is through relationships. And that's not necessarily bad, but it leaves a lot of talent on the sidelines. And that is to the detriment of our companies.
That's so true. And you mentioning, you know, the younger generation, actually, I answered my question in terms of this waning. I mean, we've done so much research on how Gen Z specifically, I mean, and you have Gen, I don't know what we're calling the next generation now, Gen AA or A. but they are so keenly aware of companies' values. And if this wanes, I'm confident that Gen Z and the younger generation are going to keep companies honest in terms of their commitments, in terms of them not having commitments yet. So I think I kind of answered my question in that maybe it will wane, but it's not for long, because I think younger consumers, how they purchase and consume products and services has changed forever.
Yeah. Yeah. And I want to not paint such a bleak picture. I can only speak from inside, the company I work for, although I've talked to my peers at other companies. I'm encouraged. I'm encouraged in that, even though I think there is an anticipation that at least the public kind of commitments, will wane, and, maybe they won't be as pronounced. And I think that speaks, frankly, a lot more to the news industry and what the news likes to cover than maybe anything else. But I'm encouraged, because I feel like I have had so many conversations with companies over the last year. And look, Facebook is still very early on its journey in this regard. We're still learning. We learn a lot from others. And we're inspired by a lot of other efforts, supplier diversity efforts at other companies. But I've had so many conversations with companies that are either looking to start or restart their supplier diversity efforts. And what I hear consistently is that this commitment has, one, leadership support, but maybe more importantly, it has a lot of employee currency. And I think, as we are seeing right now across the country and maybe even the world, in the workplace, employees are making their voices known. And when I think about this, I wrote a little note inside our company last year that when we talk about solving for racial justice issues, we can't do that independent of trying to solve for economic justice issues. And when a company stands itself up, and I'm talking about a company at any scale, I'm not talking about just a large company. I mean, I briefly had a consulting practice, and I was working in, kind of going out trying to find clients and customers. I, even with my little solopreneurship self, had to, I had to think about who my vendors were and how I was going to get stuff done. And I'll admit, I didn't always make the diverse vendor choices. And I think when I think about that, and I think how much we could achieve if every CEO, every leader, whether you're a solopreneur or you run a small company, you run a large company, committed to identifying qualified and engaging qualified diverse suppliers in their supply chain through and through, the amount of economic impact that could have from things you're already doing, the goods and services you already buy. We're not talking about new projects. We're not talking about just the things you already buy. Kind of push that would give economically in diverse communities. So I do feel like there's companies are recognizing that this is the low hanging fruit. Supplier diversity really is the low hanging fruit of a way that they can make a tangible and sustained commitment to addressing racial injustice.
I love that. I do want to end on an optimistic note. I think that was really optimistic, but one last question. In that same vein, we do have a lot of listeners at other companies, either in supplier diversity roles or they're looking to start that. I mean, what's some advice that you would give for somebody starting their journey, let's say in a corporate setting, of either heading up corporate diversity or supplier diversity initiatives for the first time, or looking to start something like that?
Yeah, the piece of advice I always give is there's kind of two things. The first is very practical. Go to your accounting department, your accounts payable department, and ask them for, at the invoice level, an output of every entity that the company has paid over some period of time. And take that output if you don't know already, which of those vendors, which of those suppliers are diverse, take them to one of the organizations that does this work. There's a number of them that will take that output in a secure fashion and validate which of those suppliers are diverse owned. And the goal of that is not to both cause you to despair or cause you to be overly excited. The goal is just to have knowledge and understanding about where you're starting from. Because I think so many people aspire to very lofty ambitions, as they should, but have no idea kind of where they're starting from. And I would also put it to you that a lot of your business stakeholders internally may not know where you're starting from. So getting data on the baseline is extremely important. So that's the first step I would do. The second thing is a little bit more philosophical, but I think it's important to communicate this early, which is getting your company to be comfortable being uncomfortable. What I mean by that is this work is never ending. We're not going to solve the issues of discrimination and racism and bias through supplier diversity. That is not its intent. And therefore, there's always going to be hard conversations. There's going to be hard conversations about diverse suppliers that, just like any other business, sometimes fail and fail you. And you're going to be standing there going, hey, yeah, this is a bad example, and it does not speak for the whole of this effort. And then on the flip side, you're going to find that, hey, a lot of this business that your company is doing with these suppliers hasn't really been challenged. And you're going to have to say to those stakeholders who are going to want to keep that continuity going, hey, we've got to give ourselves the chance to get a better result by including a diverse supplier in this RFP for this good or service that we buy that has been unchallenged with the incumbent for many years. Those are not comfortable conversations. But if you can convince not just the supplier diversity team, but your leadership to be able to be comfortable being uncomfortable, it goes, I think, a long way to giving you the space to build something that is going to be, again, kind of a muscle or in the DNA, but also something that's going to be authentic to your company. There's a lot of things we do at Folk that when I try to caveat them when I talk about them to other companies, because I know that these are unique things that Facebook allows me to do that maybe we're not going to be so easy to do at other companies. But I would submit that every company, wherever you are in your journey on this, can start with kind of these two practices and find yourself with the space to have uncomfortable but necessary conversations about a baseline of data that you have to say, here's where we're starting, and it's okay. Wherever it is, it's okay. We don't want to be here next year. So let's think about how we go to some level above where we are today by next year. And that begins you down a strategy. I guess the last thing I'd say practically is there are so many people that want to help you. And I'm certainly one of them, but I know there's so many others that want to be a resource for you to help you along this journey. So if you ever want to reach out, you can find us usually through any of the platforms, and there will be people who will help you along the way. This is a very supportive community, and I'm really proud to be a part of it and contribute in the ways that we can contribute at Facebook to, again, advance diverse suppliers and their communities in this work.
Jason, thank you so much for coming on our podcast and the transparency. Really enjoyed the conversation. I know you mentioned people can reach out. What's the best way to reach you out? What's the best website, social?
Yeah, the best way, I mean, we're pretty direct, so you can find me, Jason Trumieu, on any of the platforms. Generally, to reach out to our team, which is probably the best way since there's more of us and that can triage better, is supplierdiversity@fb.com by email. And then you can visit our Facebook Supplier Diversity page or Instagram profile. You can message us through the page. You can message us through our profile and just say you heard us on the podcast and would love to get some follow-up, and we'll do that.
Thanks again, Jason, and thanks everyone for listening.
Thank you.
Thanks to everyone listening in. To get more multicultural insights, check us out at thinknow.com and follow us on social media. You can also subscribe to this podcast on your favorite platform. Final thank you to our producer, Lucas Martinez, who created our intro music and makes our podcast sound great. To email him, reach out to martinez.lucas.a@gmail.com.